Any list of the top five Czech novels since the fall of communism should include The Sound of the Sundial by Hanna Androníková. This epic love story takes us from pre-war Czechoslovakia to India and then back into the maelstrom of Europe during World War II, as the young Czech-German engineer Thomas and his Jewish wife Rachel are swept on the tide of 20th century history. Now, for the first time, this powerful and moving novel is available in English translation. In this edition of Czech Books, David Vaughan spoke to Rachel Feingold, who edited and adapted the book for publication in the United States.
Hanna Androníková's career was cut short, tragically, in 2011, when she died of cancer at just 44. She was not a prolific writer, producing just two novels, several short stories and a handful of plays, but her literary talent was immense. The Sound of the Sundial was a bestseller from the moment it first appeared, and it was one of the first novels in the period after the fall of communism to deal with the complex and ultimately tragic interaction of the Czech, German and Jewish elements in Czechoslovakia before World War II. The book has just been published in English by Plum N Press, thanks to the hard work of American editor Rachel Feingold. I met Rachel in London on her way back to the US from a trip to the Czech Republic, where she had been meeting people who knew and worked with Hanna. She began with an extract from The Sound of the Sundial.
I'm going to read an excerpt from near the beginning of the novel. The two main characters are Tomas and Rachel Kepler. And Tomas is a building engineer working for the Batya Shoe Factory, which was an enormous company that began in Zlín in the Czech Republic and had spread to two other continents. And Tomas is getting ready to be sent to India now, where he's going to design some more buildings. And Rachel is his new wife, who he's going to have to leave behind while he begins his work in India.
And this is in the 1930s, isn't it?
This is in the early 1930s, I believe, around 1930 or 31. On the way home, he couldn't dispel his fear. It wasn't Rachel he was afraid for. He knew that she would cope without him, but he didn't know how he would cope without her. She had dinner waiting. When do you leave? The day after tomorrow. And when will I see you? I'll send for you as soon as I can. I expect in about 6 months, if there are no setbacks. 6 months, half a year. Now that he had said it aloud, his heart sank. 6 months? How innocent it sounded. Why was he feeling so wretched? I hope there won't be any setbacks. She half closed her eyes like a sorceress. There are bound to be setbacks. She nodded. The spangles on her earrings danced. She opened a box of matches. Fishing out one red-headed stick, she dashed it against the flint. It sparked into flame between her fingers. Flashes from the earrings entered his eyes and began to circulate in his bloodstream. She lit the candles on the table. In the glow of the flames, she looked like a goddess, a nymph. He could sense the molten wax against his skin. How could he leave her?
And there we have it, Hanna Androníková's prose, the wonderful storytelling, and at the same time that very lyrical prose, which is really what characterizes her writing, isn't it?
It is what characterizes her writing, and one of the great challenges of bringing this sort of work into translation, especially because her prose was complex and she was continually switching time frames and points of view, so maintaining that lyrical tone was a great challenge.
And now we have that extract from the beginning of the story where you have the young couple full of optimism and hope and romanticism embarking on their lives. But the story takes many turns, doesn't it, in the course of this epic novel? There is much tragedy as well.
Yes, there is. In some ways, I think that Hanna Androníková was writing both a very intimate love story about this German-Czech man and a Czech-Jewish woman and their love for one another in spite of all of their differences. And that's a very intimate tale. But I think on another level, she was really addressing the cultural differences between these peoples and how they lived together in Prague before the war. The war sundered these communities, the Jews, the Germans, from the Czech people permanently. And there was such a tremendous shift in the cultural sensibility that the Czech people are still recovering.
Could you very briefly give us an outline of what happens?
It is challenging because Hanna Andronikova was very ambitious and took us really all around the world. But in a nutshell, the book is bookended by a narrative of the son of this young couple, Tomas and Rachel Kepler. And his name is Daniel, and he's the narrator of most of the story. So beginning and end and little pieces in the middle, we are with him when he is already a grandfather and finally putting together the pieces of his mother's fate. Rachel, like most Czech Jews during World War II, vanished during the Shoah, during the Holocaust, and he did not learn her fate for many decades. And so this piece of the story bookends and intersperses the pieces that are in the 1930s and forward. The other narrator of some pieces of the story is called Anna Vanier, and she comes across Daniel in a coincidental setting, and they tell each other the pieces of the story that they were both missing. Anna was Rachel's best friend in the concentration camps. And so those pieces of the story are embedded throughout. And the other fascinating thread is Tomas and Rachel's life in Calcutta, which takes up a good piece of the story. If I sound to you as if I'm jumping about in time, it's because that's how the book itself unfolds. And it's very difficult to tell it going forward because it's told going all around. And so one of the wonderful gifts of Hanna was to go deeply into people's experiences in the way they might live them at the time, which is interspersed with their memories. And so the reader telescopes into and out of different periods of time in the narrative. And so embedded into the story of Rachel and the camps, embedded into the story of Daniel and Anna, is also this wonderful piece about Calcutta and their life in India when Daniel was a small boy. The climate in Calcutta was made up of sunlight, water vapor, and columns of white ants. Mildew found its way into every nook, and the exterior wall of the kitchen looked like a mushroom farm. Rachel was amazed to discover that the pins and needles in the sewing kit she had inherited from Aunt Esther had turned rusty in only a few months, and the thread had shredded. Clothing, even of the stoutest material, disintegrated, and the carpets were in tatters. "You should put your clothes in mothballs," she was advised. The crumbling books pained her the most. Frequently, after taking one off the shelf, she would find herself gathering it up from the floor with just the binding left in her hand. India does not obsess over immortality. On the contrary, every Hindu yearns to attain moksha, liberation from samsara, the endless chain of birth and death.
And that's particularly moving, that passage, given Hanna Andronikova's own early death from cancer.
Yes, it is. And I have felt very moved by the passages in the book that reflect on death, both in the general sense when talking about the Hindu culture and also in the much more particular sense in the scenes where Rachel in the camps is trying to inject some sense of meaning into the experience for the people around her by telling them myths and stories about the sun gods. And I felt that Hanna miraculously and a bit eerily was writing extraordinarily lucidly about the experience of living in the shadow of death and trying to find meaning in life in the shadow of death. And this was years before she knew she was sick.
This book was first published back in 2001, and it won the 2002 Magnesia Litera Award in the Czech Republic. At the time, we spoke to Hanna Andronikova about the book on Czech books for Radio Prague. A great deal has happened since then, and Hanna Andronikova herself died in 2011 at the age of just 44, which makes it, I think, so much the more important that this book has come out. I think we owe a great deal to you for the fact that this has happened. Tell me more.
I don't feel that I can take a lot of credit, although I put many, many loving hours into this project. I was approached by the founder of a small press in Washington, D.C. called Plamen Press. Plamen is the Slavic word for flame, and it's the same in every Slavic language. And he had been approached by the agent for Hanna's estate because there were these two existing translations of this wonderful novel, The Sound of the Sundial, and neither of them had finally come out. And both of them had very different qualities that were important to preserve. One was very, very complete and thorough, the one by David Short. And then there was a second one that Hanna had worked on with an editor named Ian Miller, which tried to pull out some more of the lyric tone of the English, but was based upon David Short's original translation. So we knew that was going to be the definitive version, but we tried to amalgamate these two versions of the novel in English. Hanna herself was fluent in English and was a great Anglophile. She studied English and Czech literature at Charles University, and it was a dream of hers to have the book appear in English. And so I feel emotionally very invested in having gotten this done, and I'm very pleased that it's come out now.
And you never met Hanna Andronikova herself, so has this process in a way being a way for you to get to know her?
Very much so, and more than I could have even anticipated. When I got deeply into this process, I became very curious about Hanna, because I myself am a Jew. I'm in my late 40s. I knew that she was my age, and so I knew she wasn't a Holocaust survivor, and then came to find out she wasn't a Jew either. And so I became very curious about why she had done this project, and I began to look deeply into her life and her work, which led me to Prague to research her biographical material, and I'm planning to continue that work toward a book myself.
Which is rather nice, because Andrzej Hrab, who is the director of the Aachen Theatre, when she died, he said that he hoped that one day somebody would write a book about her.
Yes, I was very thrilled to hear that recording of Andre saying that. And I met with him last week and the week before in Prague, and we had some good conversations about the wonderful work Hanna did at the Archa Theater, collaborating on some dramatic works in the middle. And who knows, maybe one day Plamen Press will be able to bring those out in English as well.
Rachel Feingold, thank you very much indeed for talking to us at Radio Prague.
It's been a pleasure.